Welcome back to another episode of the Girls Talk Money podcast. Today we're doing our first ever Q&A episode. We figured this would just be like a better way to get to all of your questions rather than answering them in a little section at the end of our other episodes. So thank you to everyone who's left questions in Spotify and sent them to us on Instagram. We are really excited to get to them today. And in the future, feel free to leave more questions in Spotify on this episode and any other future episodes, and we'll be sure to incorporate them into our future Q&A episodes. But starting off with our first question, coming from GPetro1, what ETFs should you invest in? I personally invest in a target date index fund, but I know, Erin, I know you invest in some ETFs, so maybe you can take this question.
Yeah, definitely. And I would just like to preface this by saying this is what I invest in. We're not financial advisors. We don't tell you what you should be investing into. So do your own research. And if you want to do that research, if you haven't listened to our Investing 101 episode with Jeremy from Personal Finance Club yet, definitely go and listen to that episode because it was so informative. But when it comes to what ETFs I invest into, I keep it so incredibly simple. I invest primarily in two ETFs. I invest in VT and VTI. That is a total US stock market ETF and a total world stock market ETF. So just by buying two funds, I'm invested into the entire US economy and then the entire world economy. So I just kind of keep it simple. I also invest a little bit of money into an ETF called SPYI, which is a NEOS ETF. That's an S&P 500 fund that utilizes covered calls. If you aren't really sure what that means, NEOS was actually one of our brand sponsors for the past couple of episodes. So right at the beginning of our last three episodes, you can see a little like 2-minute ad read on what that is and like what that entails. If you want to learn more, you can check that out as well. But most of my portfolio is built of VT and VTI.
Awesome. Okay. Our next question coming from Claire is, what are your favorite ways to get a good deal when traveling?
Yeah, I can take this one first. So I think my favorite way to get a good deal is, and this is outside of credit card points, I'm not even going to talk about this because we have a credit card point episode. I'm not sure if it's been posted already at the time that this episode is coming out or whether it's like upcoming, but we have an entire episode all about credit card points. You can go check that out. But outside of that, my favorite way to get a good deal when traveling is to pick your destination based on the deal. A lot of people go into a trip like, I want to go here and I want to go here at this exact week or weekend, and then it's really expensive. But I actually learned about this app when I was studying abroad in Europe, but I know it works in the US as well. The app is called Skyscanner, and you put in the airport that you're flying from, and then you click search everywhere, and it will tell you where the best deals are. So we would use that to kind of pick where we were going that weekend when we were wanting to take a weekend trip in Europe studying abroad. And we would get flights for so cheap. That's how we decided we wanted to go to Morocco for spring break, because there was a flight from Barcelona that was literally $50. I'm not even kidding. So just kind of picking the destination based on where the best deals are is going to be the best way to save, especially on flights.
Yeah, I was going to say like something similar where I feel like it is tricky if you like work a 9-to-5 and maybe you only get certain days off, or like you're running out of vacation time, or like if you're a teacher, it's probably not the most ideal to kind of like leave in the middle of the school year. And like you're kind of limited on some of the dates. But I like, if I'm like, I really want to go somewhere, I will kind of play around on like Google Flights or Airbnb or things like that with different dates to see like when the dates kind of, or when the prices drop, I mean, based on the dates. I will also say, like, if you're going to do a trip, obviously, like, the more flexible you can be with the dates, the better. But one thing I found when I lived in Los Angeles for a month and then I lived in San Francisco for 2 weeks last year, so I was gone for like a 6-week long trip, we found that sometimes on Airbnb, like if we stayed in one place for like, let's say 30 days, it was like $3,000. And if we stayed there for 32 days, it was $2,500. Like a big difference, like the price would drop significantly, because a lot of places have, you know, if you stay past just like a certain amount of days, the price, they like give you a discount, the price drops. So that's something to consider. Another thing I'll say too is, if you book directly, like let's say you go book a, like you go into Google Flights, you book a Delta flight or something, and it's $400. You can turn on, I learned this from Rainy. I think her thing is like Rainy Travels. She posted about this the other day and I was like, why have I not been doing this? But you can turn on the toggle on Google Flights that will alert you to price changes. So let's say the price on that same flight drops to $250. You can go in, cancel your initial one, and then, you know, schedule the new one, and you will get credit back. A lot of times you won't necessarily get the money back, but if you're someone who travels often, it's a good way to make sure that you're always getting the best deal. But definitely, like, don't be married to a certain location. If you are married to dates, and if you're married to a certain location, then be flexible with dates, because that will kind of help with, you know, finding a better deal.
And on the Airbnb topic as well, I know you were kind of talking about the differences in dates. If you toggle on that like plus or minus mm-hmm. 3 days button, so if you are flexible yeah. on dates and you say that you want to go from June 1st to July 1st to do a month-long stay, but you toggle on that plus or minus 3 days, that can mm-hmm. help you save a lot of money as well, because depending on the date that you arrive and the day that you leave, the prices can be so different.
So
being flexible on location, but then also dates that you're going on is a super good tip. Let's go into the next ones. We got this question from Josh in Spotify. If you feel comfortable saying, may you talk about your largest sources of income as a content creator, or I would just say like the social media sphere in general, and how to grow it into a successful business.
So I would say last year for me, probably, so I didn't really have a, I started social media in like maybe July, August-ish, maybe June of 2022. So going into like last year, I really wasn't like that established on social media. So I don't think I even had a product like for most of the year. So I think the majority of my income last year came from brand deals. I would say like 95% of them were inbound, like people reaching out to me, not me pitching. But I will also say that all of last year, I had several UGC clients. What's a little tricky is I own like a marketing company separate from my social media. Like I consider them like two separate channels. And I would have people reach out to me, not through my social media, but through like my marketing company about UGC. So sometimes I'm like, do I count that as like social media income or marketing company income? Like it's kind of like, cause it could be either side, since they reached out to me as a marketing company, not as like a content creator per se. But UGC has also been a good channel for me. And I will say most of that has come from inbounds as well, people reaching out. But you could, like, if that was something that interested you, you could use platforms like Contra or Upwork or things like that. Or even on LinkedIn, I'm seeing a ton of posts lately about UGC on LinkedIn, like a lot of jobs. And then I'll say my, like, selling my budget template was definitely another solid stream of income for me. I honestly, I have not like run the numbers to be like, oh, I made X from brand deals versus X from UGC, just because since I like own my marketing company too, I feel like I have a bajillion different streams of income that I don't sit down to add them up. But if I had to guess, I'd probably say like brand deals first, UGC second, and maybe templates third, just because again, I didn't have a template until like midway through the year.
Yeah. And anyone who might not know the difference between when Grace says brand deals versus UGC, essentially mm-hmm. the big difference is brand deals are a brand paying you to promote their product on your channel. So you build a following of, let's say, 100,000 followers on TikTok, and a brand reaches out to you and says, hey, post a video about our product onto your page to your audience, and we will pay you X amount of money. Whereas UGC content, you're still making a piece of short form video content, but instead you're sending it directly to the brand and they're using it in paid ads. So it has nothing to do with the audience that you've built. So a lot of people are full-time UGC creators that don't even have a social media following of their own, because all of that content is strictly for the brand's purposes. It's not for their own. So that is a good way to kind of get into getting paid for video content without growing your own social channels. And like Grace said, you can find opportunities on some freelance platforms like Upwork and Contra and Pangea, or LinkedIn, like she said, is mm-hmm. starting to have roles that will say UGC creator or social media content creator or things like that, where you can get into that space without a following. For me in 2023, I think my income was really split between brand deals and digital product sales as being the two big sources of income. I do think it was like pretty split down the middle, like 40% of my income coming from brand deals, 40% of my income coming from digital product sales, and like the rest kind of being miscellaneous. I would say, because the original question asked us how to grow this into a business, like an actual business, and Grace and I kind of take two very different routes. I would say you're much more focused on like the marketing agency side and working with brands, doing the freelance work for different like marketing related roles. But I have kind of focused more on like the digital product sales. In my opinion, if you are going to go like the social media creator route, focusing on selling a product or service as opposed to solely relying on brand deals is the best way to grow it into a sustainable business, because the brand deal money, like, it's definitely great. And I'm so thankful to be able to work with all of like the amazing brands that I did in 2023, but it's very volatile. And especially if you're going to try to do this full time, relying strictly on brand deals, just, it makes me way too anxious. I definitely wouldn't have felt comfortable quitting my full-time job and pursuing social media full-time if I didn't have more control over my income than brand deals allows. And there's a ton of different ways to be creative on selling a digital product or service. Obviously, you can grow a social media following like Grace and I did and kind of let the audience tell you what product or service they want to see from you. I know that was like the case for us, where I never set out to grow a following to sell a budget template. But about a year in, I was talking about budgeting and I was showing the template that I was using. And my followers were like, where's that template? Like, give us that template. So then I came out with a template that I sell, and now it's a big stream of income for me. But there's also a ton of different other ways to do it. People are so successful selling digital products on Etsy. So if that's a space you want to get into, watch a bunch of YouTube videos and see kind of how that works and see what you're interested in and start selling digital products in these different kind of like streams.
Yeah, I'll add to that. The amount you can make as a creator, like if you really want it to be a business, it also totally depends on what you are open to. Like, I think her name's Santina, on social media. She is a creator, and then she also became the social media manager for Dr. Miami. And so now, like, she makes money from that as well. And I think she has some other like social media management clients as well. I have brands who reach out to me and they say, we love your content. Like, we are looking for someone to kind of be the face of our page. Can you create like, you know, 15 videos a month or something? That's more of like a social media management kind of role as opposed to like a UGC. We also, like, I recently had a company reach out to me. They know that I am a creator and I also manage a creator. So I like negotiate all of her deals and things. That's another way you could do it. Like, if you were a creator and you wanted to help other creators with their content and managing their, you know, situation, you can do that. But now this company is interested in hiring me to manage their influencer marketing, because they know that I understand like how to price a video, what makes it successful, like what makes a good piece of content, like all those things too. So it's more of like a consulting basis. But some creators like wouldn't really want to do that. So it really depends on what you are interested in. And I don't know. Yeah, like making it sustainable, I guess, depends on like what you're open to and what you like. But yeah, those are definitely some ways to go about it. Our next question is from Lauren. It says, I'm buying a car in 6 months. I will have about $15,000 saved for a car. Do I buy it in cash? Do I buy a $20,000 car with a small loan? I need a car with low miles since I travel for work, and I could pay it off the car by December 2024.
I can take this first. I feel like you probably have an opinion on this as well, but this was the situation that I was in when I needed a new car after graduating from college. I had a lot of cash in my savings account, but I was kind of in a situation where I was like, do I pay cash for a car or do I put a larger down payment down and have a car payment? I also needed a car that was really good on gas because I traveled for work a lot. And when you travel for work, you get a lot of money back in mileage reimbursement that is more than the amount you're spending on gas. So I kind of justified it as, okay, well, I'm going to have a $250 a month car payment, but I'm going to get much more of that back from the per diem and from the mileage reimbursement from traveling for work. So that's how I made the decision to put just a big down payment down, but still kind of take that car loan. I think the loan in total was $12,000. So it wasn't anything super crazy, but I had the $12,000 in my savings account to cover that. And I still decided to take the car payment, which a lot of people might disagree with. It's definitely personal preference what you are comfortable with. If you aren't comfortable with having a car payment, then maybe you do just pay for it in cash. But I was in a situation where I was like, okay, I could get a car payment at 3%, but my student loans are coming back and they're at 5%. So do I want to wipe out my savings account to pay for my car in cash, but then not have any money for my student loans when they resume after the interest pause and all of that? So it's really personal preference. I don't think that there's anything necessarily bad about having a car payment, but again, it's just what you feel comfortable doing.
Yeah. So I am in the process of saving for a car right now because I'm currently driving my mom's 2009 Toyota Camry that we got in 2008. So she's been around for 16 years? Like, we've had it for a long time. It will probably last a couple more years, to be honest. But it was like her car. And then when she wanted to get a new car, she let my brother drive it and gave it to him, and he drove it for a while. And then she was like, I guess you can have it, because like, what, it's really not worth much at this point. Like, so I'm just driving it until like I'm dragging the bumper down the road. But this is something that I'm thinking about too, with like, how much do I save and how much do I put down to a car? So these are a few things I'm thinking about. One, you don't always have to make the like financially practical decision. Like, I personally have a goal to pay for the entire car in cash because I don't want to have another loan. However, some people would say, well, if you can get a low interest car loan, like invest the extra money, like don't like whatever, because you're going to make more investing. And the like one that would mathematically make sense, quote unquote, is like having the car, like the low interest car loan, and then investing the money. But like, to me, like, I don't want to do that. So I would think about what makes sense to you. The second thing I would say is, Lauren, you mentioned like a $15,000 car. You know, if you use the 15K or do you buy the 20K car with a small loan, like, I would think about the, like, remember the fact that, for example, this car we've had, the Camry we've had for 16 years. So I know when I go to buy another car, like, I'm not a person who values getting a new car every several years. Like, I want something that's going to last a long time and that I can literally ride it until the wheels fall off. So for me, if that means paying a little bit more to make sure that, you know, I'm getting a car that's going to last. So for example, some people say I'm crazy for thinking about this, but I'm 25. Whatever car I buy next is going to be the car that I have my future children in. So I want to make sure that whatever car I get is like, has enough room for a stroller and like has space in the back, because again, I plan to keep it for a very long time. So I would think about that too. Because it isn't just about like what makes sense right now. It's about the, like, it's an investment, like you're going to have it for a long time if you're the type of person that wants to have a car for a long time. Because let's say like that 20K car that you're kind of debating, you feel like, you know, it has a much better safety rating. It's going to last you a lot longer. Like, I would personally, like, I wouldn't skimp and try, like, I would just pay that. I would do the 20K car and have a small loan versus like trying to get something like cheaper. But I think it's good that you're being realistic about like, you need a car with like low mileage, since you travel for work. Like, I would think through that. Like, remember too, that it is like a long-term kind of investment, you know, like,
totally,
you
have agree.
It for a while. It's not like a one time, like, you know what I mean? I don't know. It'll be around for a while.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. When I was buying a new car, the only thing on my mind was getting a car that was super good on gas because I was driving a lot for work. And then literally 3 months later, I ended up quitting that job and taking a remote job. So I can't go back and redo that decision, obviously. And like, my car is totally fine and I'm going to have it for so long. But if I would have kept my older car, because once I stopped driving for work, my old car would have been totally fine. My dad didn't want me breaking down 5 hours away from home when I was driving it every week. And I understand that. But when I was remote, my older car would have been totally fine. And if I would have waited a couple of years and was buying a car now at this point, I definitely would have the same thought process as you. Like, hey, maybe I should get something a little bit bigger because I'm entering my mid to late 20s and who knows whether I'm going to have to pack a bunch of stuff into my car to move across the country or anything like that. You kind of just don't know. And now I might be at a situation or at a point where I have to upgrade my car sooner rather than later because of the size of it. When if I would have spent a little bit of money, more money up front, I could have avoided that.
Yeah. I also will add to like in the situation of like Lauren's question about like, do I buy cash or like the loan? Like I would, what's helpful for me when it comes to like the whole loan thing is to do the math, like use like a loan calculator to say like, okay, if I put 15K down or if I, you know, put 20K down, well, this would be 15K down. Yeah. So 15K down on a $20,000 car and I have a loan, it's $5,000 loan at this certain interest rate, how much am I going to be paying in the actual like long run? Because I see people who buy like very expensive cars, they have loans on them and they do not have good interest rates. And when all said and done, they're buying a $30,000 car and then they're paying $45,000 for it or something crazy by the end of it. Or even just like 40K or 35K, like it's so much more. So I would think about that too. But I will also add here before we go to the next question that you can negotiate not only the price of your car, but you can negotiate the interest rate. So a lot of people don't know this and I'm not the best negotiator. So I'm not like the person to ask like how to do this, but you can negotiate the interest rate. And I will also say that a lot of times local credit unions have much better interest rates on car loans than like if you go through someone at the dealership or whatever. So I would think about that too. Like those are all negotiable. But I would ultimately like calculate the total like all in cost because that might, you know, like think about it. Okay, if I'm paying $25,000 for this $20,000 car, is that like worth it to me? Does that feel like a good purchase? And if that like extra bit that you're paying in interest really bugs you, then I would say that's a sign. That's how I felt about my student loans. I ultimately decided not to pay them off like super. I mean, I paid them off like really quickly, but I've taken like a slower approach on the last chunk of my student loans because it was going to be like an extra $1,000 in interest over the course of like 10 years because my loans are at such a low rate that I was like, that extra $1,000 over 10 years does not bother me. But if it was $10,000, it would. So I would kind of like do the math and think about that too.
Yeah. Definitely. Let's get into our last question here, which is a fun one to end on. I don't know who this question came from. I did a Q&A on my Instagram the other day and someone asked me this, but I love this question. Where did your passion for personal finance come from?
To be honest, I don't know if I like entirely know. I feel like I've always been a money-minded kind of person. When I was literally 12 years old, I had collected like any money I was ever given for a birthday or Christmas or anything, like, you know, when like your grandma gives you like a card and it's got $5 in it, like that type of thing. Like anytime I had gotten that, I saved that money. When I was a kid too, and we'd go to the grocery store and my parents would pay cash. This was back in like the early 2000s, you know, my parents would pay cash and I would ask if I could keep the coins, like when they would give back the change, and I would literally put it all into a jar. And when I was 12 years old, I remember that was when we opened like a bank account for me and I did the initial deposit and it was like $720. Like I collected all of it. I was always like a saver, like always very conscious about my money. I think as I got older, it was kind of just something that was pretty normal to me. But in terms of like the social media side of things, like I had friends who, I remember I had a friend in college who was like, I feel like I should open a credit card, but I don't know which one. And I feel like you would know the answer because I've always been like the mom of the group, the very mature friend. And I also kind of had my money together in college. Like I was budgeting in college and I just had a good handle on everything. And so I realized a lot of people didn't feel comfortable talking about money and I was always very comfortable talking about it. And I love like helping people. I want to feel like the work I'm doing has a purpose and is making people's lives better. And I think that kind of started my passion for it. Like I was like, oh, like I can actually help people by talking about this. I will say, and we're doing an episode coming up on spirituality and human design, but my friend Taryn, she'll be coming on the podcast. She is like a human design like coach. And I don't quite know how to explain like human design in terms of spirituality, but you can Google it and it will give you like some details on it. But basically part of my human design says that like part of my purpose is helping people achieve material wealth and like abundance in other aspects of their life as well. Because when you feel abundant in other areas of your life, you tend to like make more money because you're like showing up with a different energy. And I think that is a good kind of thing as well. Like that kind of sparks some of my passion as well. Like it's kind of just, I don't know, innate to who I am.
I love that. My passion for personal finance came in a little bit more of a concrete, like flip of the switch of my mind way, where it seems like you were always just super mindful of it. And I was always relatively good with my money. I've always been a numbers person. I've always been really good at math. Like I was literally an economics major in college. So I've always been relatively decent with my money. And I grew up with parents that educated me on saving a little bit of money every time I got paid and making sure I kept my credit good and all of that kind of stuff. But my passion for personal finance started with an ex-boyfriend that I had in college, which I don't love that my passion for something that I do for work started with a boy, but it's fine. Every relationship teaches you something. But my ex was a financial advisor. And he told me when I was literally 19 years old that his goal in life was to retire by 40, which knowing him, like he will absolutely achieve that. I have no doubt about it. But I was sitting there as a 19-year-old and I was like, how in the heck does this man think he's going to retire at 40? My parents are in their 60s and they're still trying to figure out how they're going to retire at normal retirement age. And this man thinks he's going to do that 25 years earlier. Like, what? But he said that and he, you know, started talking to me about the whole financial independence retire early thing, which if you don't know what that is, it's an entire movement of people who live their life a certain way and have a certain savings rate that allows them to invest a lot of money. And then one day their investments take over their need to earn active income on a monthly basis. And their investments can support their lifestyle. And it just kind of opened my eyes to a lot of different things and made me question the way that we're conditioned to think about work and about money. And it made me realize that money is only a tool to help you live the life you want to live. Because I think we're also really conditioned to think of money as the end all be all, like why we wake up in the morning and go to work. It's because of money. It's not because of money. It's because of what money can do for you. And unfortunately, a lot of people live their life and will live their entire life with money being the sole decision or the sole factor for a lot of the decisions that they make. And, you know, I like learned about this in college and he started sending me a bunch of podcasts that he listened to and a bunch of books that he read. And I read them and I got really interested in it, but then I didn't really see what that could do for me until I started my first job out of college. And I really hated my first full-time job out of college. I literally quit it within the first 4 months. I hated it that bad. But I was looking into my life and I was like, yeah, I could go get another job, but I don't think that's going to solve, you know, the root like problem here, the root problem being that I didn't see myself working for someone else for 40 plus years in my adult life. And I, again, saw money as a tool to kind of help me get out of that. And that's when I got really interested in investing and making sure that I was really diligent about tracking my spending and making sure that I wasn't overspending, because I kind of saw like the greater good there, that I was eventually buying back my time freedom through investing my money and saving for my future.
Yeah, I love that. Well, that wraps up like our list of questions that we have for today. But if you have questions you want us to answer in the next Q&A episodes, I think we're going to do it this style kind of going forward instead of at the end of our regular episodes. It just makes it easier for us to get to everyone's questions. But if you have any questions you want us to answer in the future, you can always leave them in Spotify, whether it's on this Q&A episode or on any of our other episodes. And you can also send them over to us on Instagram at Girls Talk Money Pod or our personal Instagrams. Like if you have like specific questions that are like, I don't know, more directed towards us, but we will probably bring them into these episodes anyways. But with that, thank you for listening to another episode of the Girls Talk Money podcast, and we will see you in next week's episode.
Thanks for tuning into today's episode of the Girls Talk Money podcast. We're excited to share that we're bringing this online community of like-minded women in person with Trova Trip. We're hosting a trip in late 2024, early 2025, and if you're interested in coming, complete the survey linked in the show notes. The survey will allow you to share what locations you're interested in, what you'd want to do on the trip, and your budget so we can plan the best trip possible. If you have any questions about the trip, feel free to send us a DM at Girls Talk Money Pod on Instagram. And with that, we'll see you in next week's episode.